If it seems sometimes like opponents don't know how to handle politicians like Donald Trump or Doug Ford, if it seems like we in the media don't know how to cover them properly, that's because they don't, and we don't. After Trump's election in 2016, a lot of Canadians comforted ourselves by saying that type of leader could never win elections here.
Wrong.
And then one did, in Ontario at least, and now Maxime Bernier may be poised to attempt the same trick nationally next year. The current Canadian political system, the party structures, the checks and balances, the media machine that covers them, can't cope with chaos. And that's what these candidates represent, the politics of chaos. Where did the style come from? Why is it so effective right now? And is there anything we can point to as a cause of or a solution to? Because if this is going to be the future of politics, then everyone else who misses the old days of norms and rule and order is going to have to adapt quickly. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Justin Ling is a freelance journalist. He writes about politics, among other subjects, for everyone from Maclean's to Vice to The Walrus, and he hosts a bi-weekly Canadian politics podcast called Oppo. So this is kind of his beat. Justin, what is chaos politics?
Chaos politics is the idea that you can mess with the people you're running against so severely that you can kind of continue unabated, right? We saw this from Donald Trump during the campaign. It often takes the form of whataboutism, right?
Right.
So what about this? You know, you have ties to Russia. Well, what about Hillary Clinton's ties to Russia? It's chaos in the purest sense because it just muddies reality to the point where it's so impossible to get firm ground anywhere, and everyone's constantly in this state of defense, fear, and anxiety. And it means that if you are doing so most effectively, you are mastering the political landscape.
So you wrote a piece in The Walrus almost right after Doug Ford was elected, predicting that no, he would not be normal once he got into office. And, you know,
yeah,
you can take
right.
your victory lap now.
Oh, yeah. I'm really enjoying this. The adults in the room let Doug Ford slash city council in Toronto by more than half in the middle of a municipal election campaign, and then try to invoke the notwithstanding clause for the first time in Ontarian history in the context of democratic election in Canadian history. It was never intended to be used in such a way. The fact that he was willing to go that far for something that fundamentally served no purpose is extraordinary. I mean, he stands up and says, we need to cut city council in order to fix the dysfunction. Who caused the dysfunction for the last several years? The Ford brothers. I mean, the dysfunction on city council was part and parcel of the way the Fords ran City Hall. They baked chaos into the Toronto political system. One government in Ontario then caused further chaos to go back and screw with city council. I mean, he, in a very mean-spirited way that is extraordinary in the Canadian political context, tried to kneecap the entire democratic body of the city of Toronto and then invoked a constitutional override when he was challenged on it. That is chaos in the purest sense.
This is so unusual in Canadian politics. And we tend to, certainly after Donald Trump's election and when, you know, the rumors about Doug Ford running for the conservative leadership started, I feel like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that there was a tendency in Canada to kind of think, well, we're immune to that. We're not going to fall for that. We're more reasoned and more laid back. But it seems to have happened.
Let me give you a completely unrelated example that I'm sure once I give this example, I'll get more angry emails from people who think I'm off base on this one. But early 2017, Chrystia Freeland was appointed to the federal cabinet as Minister of Foreign Affairs.
Yeah.
Chrystia Freeland, obviously, is a harsh critic of Russia. Her predecessor, Stéphane Dion, wanted to reestablish ties with Russia and potentially drop the sanctions. At that time, the Russian embassy started floating around stories to journalists in Ottawa, including to me, accusing her grandfather of being a Nazi collaborator.
Oh, I remember that.
I will be upfront. There is some truth to it. Her grandfather edited a newspaper that became a mouthpiece for Nazi propaganda once the Germans occupied Ukraine.
Okay.
Why that is relevant to our current political landscape is completely beyond me. But eventually, the Russian embassy succeeds in getting the story into the mainstream press. And this debate crops up. And there's columnists who start saying, maybe it came from the Russians. But you know what? We're too smart to fall for these disinformation tactics. Let's deal with this story on the face. We really need to have a conversation about Chrystia Freeland's maybe Nazi grandfather. No, we don't. You know, by letting somebody dictate the discussion in that way, we're losing.
Yep.
You pretend like we are better and smarter and more intelligent than this, but we're not smarter than the Americans. We're not smarter than the Italians. We're not smarter than the Hungarians, all of whom have fell victim to Russian disinformation tactics and who have elected, to varying degrees, far-right or anti-establishment governments who are throwing out the liberal order. We could very much fall victim to that. So in the same respect, pretending as though our very smart liberal system can guard against the inherent illiberal attitudes standards of Doug Ford is stupid. It's wrong. He is capable of breaking the system, and if not checked properly, whether that's by people in his party, in his office, in the legislature, in the media, so on, he will break it.
How much is the constant 24/7 news cycle contributing to this?
I was talking to someone about this the other day who said kind of the same thing. They said, you know, is the advent of the internet to blame? And I kind of said, when radio came along, newspaper reporters said, this will be the death of the reasoned editorial, the reasoned journalism. When TV came along, radio and newspaper reporters and the old guard got together and said, TV will be the death of intelligent dialogue. When 24-hour news networks came along, yeah, the evening news anchors said, and this goes on and on. Every time something new comes along, we tend to point at it and say, this will make all of us stupider. I don't think that's the case. We are smarter now and more well-informed than we've ever been. Part of the problem is when people like Doug Ford, Donald Trump, or Maxime Bernier or whatever start telling you they're gaming the system, they're lying to you. You know, Donald Trump points at Google and says, Google is gaming your news results with bad information about me.
Right.
Well, that's really worrying because now you've created a system where you're actively trying to push people away from news that is critical of reality or critical of, you know, your favorite politician's take on politics. And I think once you get there, that's where we're in a real problem. So you actually, you know, whether you're Doug Ford or Donald Trump or whoever, you're encouraging your followers to build their own news environment in such a way that we weren't able to do before. And there's huge benefits to that, but there's also huge drawbacks. If you build a bunker for yourself and tell yourself, I only want to listen to news that is complimentary of Doug Ford, that's real worrying. Because what if he does something worse? What if he does take the next step? And, you know, next time it's not about getting rid of seats on the Toronto City Council. This is hypothetical, not suggesting he'll do this. But what if it's about striking voters from the voter roll? What if it's about saying, you know, you have to register a week before you vote? And then he invokes the notwithstanding clause when a court says that that's not constitutional under Section 2B of the Charter. That's a real problem.
How much of this is caused by the fact that our political norms never predicted someone like Ford or Trump or even Bernier maybe? Because we have norms that we expect politicians to stay within, right?
I think they did predict it, though. I think we have for decades said, if this ever happens here, we have a system of checks and balances to make sure this will never actually get too far. We've always said this. I mean, Canada has had its own little flirtations with quasi-fascism. Premier Duplessis in Quebec was kind of a fascist. We've deluded ourselves. We've said the checks and balances around our system will stop someone from getting elected, which they never actually claimed to do. The problem now is that I think a lot of the checks and balances have gotten so weakened over the years, thanks to the absolute dominance of the party structure, thanks to maybe the news media shirking some of its responsibility. You know, there's a thousand different explanations, but I think some of those checks and balances are not as strong as they used to be, and we're finding the pitfalls of that. In this case, when it comes to cutting city council, you know, I think the court system did its job. I don't know that there was actually a great constitutional argument to be made that cutting city council was an infringement on the charter. That being said, you know, it is a crazy decision, and maybe it should have been unconstitutional in some way. Of course, the charter was never built with the idea that municipalities would be a thing, so it's tough.
How much of this is a strategy? How much of this is really scripted by people like Ford or Trump? Or are they just reactive? To the casual observer, a lot of it just seems like lashing out, bearing vindictive grudges, and being defensive in terms of Trump and his Google results, being defensive of anything that comes at you.
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, we've seen Doug Ford through his entire political career operate as, you know, a body bruiser. He is of the belief that if you hit me, I'm going to hit you back three times as hard until you stop hitting me. Certainly he's reacting as things come up, but that's fundamentally his political philosophy. It is a bare-knuckle, winner-take-all strategy to politics. I think what's really disconcerting about him thus far is that he fixated on a couple of ideas during the campaign or during his time at City Hall that he just has not dropped, even if the courts say it's not allowed, even if you know, his own advisors are saying...
Right, he can't back down.
Yeah, and I think that's an example of what happened when it comes to Toronto City Council. Sex ed is a great example. You know, he certainly had people around him saying, you know, we can't have children understanding what transgender people are, and he, you know, got into office, and that was one of the first things he did was to repeal that. In a functional system, you'd have his MPPs standing up and saying, you know what? I'm not comfortable with this. When we talk about checks and balances, it should be those MPPs standing up and saying, you know what, Doug, I'm not voting for this.
Right, and Congress should stop Donald Trump and not give him money for the border wall.
And at least in the U.S., you actually have situations where certain you know, elected representatives are standing up and saying, yeah, it's too far. We're not doing that. I would love to see a single MPP in Ontario or an MP in Ottawa, in Trudeau's party, or anywhere in the country, any party, stand up and actually say no to legislation they don't support or cannot ideologically get behind, we don't see that anymore. And that was supposed to be, that actually is the fundamental check on power built into our parliamentary democracies, but it doesn't happen. Party loyalty has become all-encompassing, and that's a really scary thing. And that, I think that freaks me out more than anything, because this whole argument that the adults in the room around Ford will make him see the light on certain things is completely blown apart by the fact that none of them are actually willing to stand up to him.
When you talk to your conservative friends or colleagues or other people, what do they say about that? Do you have any idea why nobody has?
I think it's blind ambition. You know, I did talk to one conservative who had been in the Progressive Conservative Party for decades, and I asked him that question. I was like, how is it that Christine Elliott or Carol Mulroney or Vic Fedeli or any of the more
strong, smart, principled conservatives,
100%, you know, these smart guys and women, how is it that none of them have voiced concern about this? Now, this was during the campaign, you know, especially like, I'm talking to him. I'm like, you know, you're a fiscal conservative. How comfortable are you with the fact that both the NDP and Liberals are putting together costed platforms that actually show a route back to a balanced budget, and Doug Ford does not have that, and what's worse is promising billions of dollars in new spending that he has not costed for. How can you deal with that? And he goes, I can't. And I go, well, how do you think, you know, the Vic Fidelis of the world can? And he goes, I don't know. That was the problem he was having. He's looking at these people he's worked with for so long, people who've been in his party for so long, and saying, how is it that I'm able to go, this is crazy, I'm not getting on this train, and all of you are, you know, waving to friends and family from the caboose? Like, it is bizarre that these people have so aggressively and enthusiastically bought into something that they campaigned and rallied and worked so hard against for the past 30 or 40 years. And that is so bizarre to me. And that is a mass delusion that I think has become so intrinsic to our party structure that it freaks me out.
Yeah. Is there any answer to that? Because it doesn't seem to be getting any better in any election recently.
I tend to think more parties will break up that party hegemony. I think we'll diffuse the power the more parties we have, and maybe proportional representation is a way to get there.
Sweden was an interesting example recently, right? Because they have a ton of parties.
They do, and they kind of work in coalitions fundamentally.
But it goes back and forth, and so you're constantly trying to make a deal with somebody across the aisle to support something you want.
That's right. And obviously that doesn't completely short circuit far right or illiberal movements. You saw the Swedish Democrats do relatively well, not as well as they're expected
to. Right, but they still now need help to implement any proposal they might bring forward.
Yeah, and there's pros and cons of this. I mean, you know, a fractured political landscape makes it look like things aren't getting done, which bolsters strongmen. And it's tough. I don't know what the answer to that is, but maybe it's fundamentally a conversation that needs to happen where we need to start talking about looking at candidates who run for the parties as opposed to parties that field candidates, right? You know, if I knew who I was electing in my riding, most people in my riding did, and we elected that person based on their personality and their experience and their philosophy, as opposed to having Doug Ford come to the riding and say, vote for this guy, I tend to think that would engender better candidates that would be a little more willing to stand up to their party if need be. I'm not super optimistic about that. And obviously, you know, our political landscape and, you know, our news media, which is running on a shoestring budget at the moment, I don't anticipate that that's going to happen. I mean, you just saw someone cross the floor in Ottawa. She, you know, told reporters the other day that she never really tried to voice any of her concerns to the leader, at least not on most things. She kind of just decided that she'd be better suited with another party. That's crazy. You know, why wouldn't you get up and say, you know what, actually, I think my party's wrong here, here, and here. If they kick you out, fine, you're an independent now, go join another party. But, you know, you're not elected to a party. You're elected to your riding. You're elected as a member of parliament. You have an obligation to go voice, you know, whether you believe or what your constituents believe, and to only think of that through the lens of what party you're in is so backwards to me. And I think that's part of the philosophy that is so toxic and that leads to Doug Ford presiding over a, you know, a caucus of sycophants. And I find that kind of enraging and disappointing. And here's another example. Rod Phillips is the Minister of Energy. Smart guy, used to run Post Media, you know, was a contender for the leadership. A lot of people were talking about him as a potential successor to Patrick Brown. Obviously didn't run. He might run next time. He's now kind of tasked with launching this constitutional challenge against the federal government's carbon tax or carbon pricing system. We are blowing money to launch a constitutional challenge that will fail. I've been told that his office has the legal opinion saying, we're going to lose this. they're doing it anyway because Doug Ford is obsessed with fighting the carbon tax because he launched this aggressive campaign against it.
And everything's personal.
And, you know, Doug Ford needs to beat the carbon tax or at least look like he tilted at the windmill as hard as he could. And that's so disappointing. I mean, this is not how government's supposed to work. The federal government has the constitutional ability to raise and levy taxes. End of story. The Supreme Court has said this enough. The fact that we're wasting money on this just so Doug Ford can placate the people he convinced to hate the thing is enraging.
But he'll also get coverage for doing that. And that brings me kind of the last aspect of this that I wanted to ask you, because it started to happen with Trump, where you move from sort of one Trump news story to the next, to the next, to the next in a span of like 12 hours. And before you know it, you've gone through like five of them, right? And it started to happen in Ontario. I wanted to have you on this podcast 2 weeks ago, but we waited because every day there was a new development and new headlines about Doug Ford. And by constantly making those headlines, he makes it tougher to cover the big picture. So how do we get past that? How should we cover chaos politicians?
I don't know. I genuinely, legitimately don't know.
Oh, thanks for coming on the podcast.
I've said as much. And every time I've written about Ford or Trump, you know, there's a point of the story where I go, I don't know what the solution to this is. And occasionally I'll even throw in a line. I wrote a thing about Faith Goldie, of course, the far right candidate for mayor of Toronto the other day, where I think, even in the story I wrote, in writing this article, am I drawing attention to a candidate that people should be afraid of? Or am I drawing attention to a candidate that maybe people will support? I don't know. I'm making the problem worse. I can't think about that because if I do, my brain will melt. I know that the way we're doing it now is bad. that's about all I know. I mean, we need a critical press. We need thoughtful and reasonable people in the legislature to keep their own government honest. And we need fundamentally a premier who believes in these norms and how things are supposed to work. And we can't keep pretending like he's normal because he's not.
That's a good way to end it.
Sure.
Thanks, Justin.
Absolutely.
Justin Ling, freelance writer and host of a biweekly Canadian politics podcast called Oppo, O-P-P-O. Go check it out. That was The Big Story. For more from us, visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. Check us out on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram at Big Story Podcast. And find us wherever you get podcasts. Rate us, review us. We love to hear from you. Tell your friends. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you on Monday.